Hello, hello, ghouls,
ghosts,
goblins,
and everything in between. Welcome to Across the Veil with hosts Emma
and Zelda. We're two amateur cryptozoologists on a mission to explore the things that lie beyond.
Beyond what?
I don't know. The veil? It just sounds poetic and mysterious.
True. Learn about cryptids, folklore, monsters, and things that are just kind of haunted.
Anything that seems a little otherworldly and strange.
Just like us. New episodes out every Thursday on all of your favorite podcast platforms like Spotify and Apple Podcasts.
Follow us on Instagram at across.the.veil and Twitter at across_the_veil1.
We hope you join us next time.
Across the veil.
Apologies for the slightly late episode, everyone, but here we are. We're back. We're out. This is Friday, so this is Christmas. This is Friday. I don't know. My brain's everywhere. And you know what? That goes in with this episode. So, I don't know. Without further ado, are you guys ready to get weird? Welcome to The Kill Count, where we tally up the victims in all our favorite horror movies. I'm James A. Janisse, and today is the wrong intro. Okay, what's going on, everybody? My name is Satya Miele, and you're listening to So You're an Artist. It's the only podcast where we ask ourselves the all-too-important question, So You're an Artist, but what is your actual job? Or it's real job. What is your real job? I don't know. I messed it up. That intro before, by the way, I'm not being paid. I don't even actually know the guys, but they would be, I'd love to get them on this podcast. James Ajinis and Chelsea of the Dead Meat YouTube channel, where they break down all of the deaths in horror movies, and also in addition talk about to offer a bunch of awesome behind the scenes stuff from these horror movies and talk about the process of making them. They also give you a little summary of the movies. They're really fun to watch, especially if you've seen the horror movie before. And they also have this an amazing podcast called the Dead Meat Podcast. That is not, once again, that is just a shameless plug for them because I just love their stuff so much. So go ahead and check that out, the Dead Meat YouTube channel. Look at that. That's like, oh, this episode is going to be riddled with ads and plugs and reads. So go ahead and prep for that. How are you guys? I'm okay. I've been okay. You start to feel the isolation of the lockdown a little bit as it starts to creep over you, especially since we're, you know, kind of in a brand new one. Yeah, you know, we just kind of find ourselves in that spot, and sometimes it just helps. Just don't forget, you guys, reach out to folks, reach out to your friends, talk, and that's it. And you know, that thought that, oh, well, I don't want to, you know, inconvenience anybody. Most of the time, you're not inconveniencing people. You just want, unless you hit them up like every single day obsessively, then it's a little bit weird. But don't forget to reach out and talk, especially if you're going through some stuff, and just chat with folks. Look at that. Look how wholesome I'm being right now. And back to the awful, dry, sarcastic wit that everybody just loves about this show. See? There it was again. Brock did not join us for this interview as he had a schedule. I think we recorded this interview a couple weeks ago during his finals week. So he's not around to do this one, and for the intro, we couldn't get the connection, was really bad. You know, he's still out at the ranch, but for the next episode, we will be together at the ranch, COVID safe. All right, so we will be hosting that one together. So that's the whole thing. It's you know, with our living situations, it's a little bit difficult to get this stuff together. But as we both embark onto the break, and especially since, you know, summer is kind of around the corner, I guess. It's actually, wait, is it further away than it is closer? I don't know. So I'm going to go ahead and totally take back that statement about summer being around the corner. Winter break is literally around the corner. It's like a week. So what's up? I had the pleasure of having a Zoom interview with actor, writer, and comedian Nick Rutherford. We sat down for about an hour and chatted about, of course, his career and all the shows he's worked on and his comedy, and also about, you know, the accessibility of, you know, the entertainment industry, you know, then versus now, and how, you know, writers' rooms have shifted now during, you know, this COVID situation, how things have changed, but how they are still managing to put out content. I also chatted with Nick about acting in and writing for Adult Swim's Dream Corp LLC, writing for Rick and Morty now in the fourth, fifth, and sixth seasons, which are coming soon, and about his 2018 movie, The Unicorn, which he wrote and acted in along with Lauren Lapkus. And we also talked about, you know, where he started off with, you know, doing different kinds of sketch comedies with Beck Bennett and Kyle Mooney. I want to take a second to specifically talk about Dream Corp LLC because this is the project that this interview centers around, and you'll hear in a minute how Nick got into it and how he started writing for it and how, you know, the different kinds of philosophies are explored in the show, and also about the beauty of the animation and the characters and the universe that they build, this wildly, just wonderfully creative, weird universe. But so Dream Corp LLC, for those of you who don't know, is essentially, it's like a crazy science fiction spin on dream therapy. It centers around this team of doctors, and I'm doing air quotes around doctors, who specialize in treating patients who have different, you know, different problems, whether psychological or physical, through dream therapy. And the dream sequences are animated using rotoscope animation, which is just this absolutely fantastic, beautiful style of animation. And if you're not familiar with rotoscope animation, films like A Scanner Darkly or TV shows like Undone, both of which we talk about, are animated with roto. I believe the film The Beatles' Yellow Submarine was actually also partially roto. So it's an absolutely beautiful style of animation. And the show itself also explores like Eastern philosophy and just different kinds of spiritualities, while also, you know, playing on a couple real scientific concepts here and there. So there's a lot of research that goes into the show. Each episode is really short. It's like 10 minutes, except in the new season, they have about, you know, I think they have a couple half-hour episodes. So we talk specifically about season 3. So where can you watch the absolutely, I can't get enough of Dream Corp. I love it. Where can you watch Dream Corp? You can check out seasons 1 and 2 on Hulu, available now. And if you would like to check out some of the unlocked episodes of season 3, you can go onto the Adult Swim website, where most of season 3 is available to just watch. And if you have a television provider, you can log in and watch all of season 3. Seasons 1 through 4 of Rick and Morty are fully available on Hulu, and seasons 5 and 6, I believe, are coming soon. If you want to watch Nick's film, The Unicorn, that is also available on Hulu. Get to know Nick better by following him on Twitter. That is at Nick Rutherford, Rutherford spelled R-U-T-H-E-R-F-O-R-D, or Instagram at Nicholas Rutherford. That is Nicholas Rutherford. If I need to spell Nicholas, it's gonna be a problem. Without further ado, my interview with Nick Rutherford. This is a fifth season, right? You guys are writing that fifth, because the fourth one's done, right? That aired already, the whole thing?
Fourth one is done and out. We're actually writing the sixth season now. Fifth one is also done, but is being animated.
Oh, wow.
So we're still doing work on that. Yeah, we're kind of ahead of it now, which is great.
Wow. Oh, hell yeah, dude. Okay, before you prefer Nick or Nicholas? I know Nicholas is what's listed online, so.
Oh, yeah, Nick is fine.
All right, perfect.
What about you? Let me guess it.
Go for it.
Satya.
All right. Not wrong. The H is silent, though, so it's Satya.
Satya. That's better.
Yeah. Satya. Yeah, it's Sanskrit. My mom spent 7 years in India.
Oh, that's cool.
So I got the Sanskrit name and all. I guess, I don't know. You know what? While we talked about Rick and Morty, is this your, what season did you start writing with them?
I started writing like near the end of season 4. So I like 3/4 of the way through season 4, they brought me in. And then there was a little bit of a hiatus. We were still, I want to say, I guess we were about to shoot Dream Corp. Something got in the way. I think we were about to shoot Dream Corp. So I came on for a couple of weeks, had to leave for Dream Corp. And then season 5 started and I came on from the beginning of that one. But a lot of that started with finishing season 4. I think we still had like 3 or 4 episodes to finish by then.
And you jumped into, And I mean, does that come, because it seems like based off of your, you know, your works, you've cultivated a relationship with Adult Swim. Did like Dan or Justin bring you in, or was it mostly an Adult Swim thing?
I had met. Sorry, with this, I'll be less distracted in 1 second. Okay, I had met Dan forever ago, but I was brought in through Mike McMahon, who was initially started as a writer's assistant on the show, maybe the first season, first or second season, and then got promoted to writer, and then eventually was like the showrunner. And he brought me in forever ago to like do like a brainstorm session with Dan and one other writer. So it was just like the three of us. I guess Dan had gotten some offer from FX or something like that. Some right. network was like, hey, do you want to pitch us a bunch of like short form animated shows? Basically just trying to do what Adult Swim does. A lot of networks have tried to do that actually. So I came in just for like 2 weeks of just like blue skying random like kind of sci-fi short ideas or short series ideas. And Dan and I like got along really well. And then it probably would have been a year or longer before Mike was like, hey, do you want to submit a packet for Rick and Morty? And I was like, yeah, I'd love to write for Rick and Morty. And yeah. Here we are. Yeah, exactly.
It's a really awesome show, and I look forward to seeing what you have to, you know, what you bring to it when season 5 and 6 come out, especially since... Thanks, man. You also, so were you writing on Dream Corp from season 1, or did you jump in a couple seasons later?
No, I was on Dream Corp from the beginning. Dream Corp is, I mean, it's like probably the proudest project I've ever been a part of. Like, I think it's the most beautiful, most artistic, and most thoughtful and funny. And I fully just got an audition for the pilot to play like a patient on the show. And through that met Daniel Stessen, who created the show and directs all the episodes. And we got along really, really well, and we became buds. And so when it got picked up, he was like, he called me. I'd actually just gotten fired from Saturday Night Live.
Right.
And he called me. It was like the day I got back in L.A. And he was like, so we got good news. They picked up the show for 1 season. We're doing 6 episodes. I want you to help me write them all, and I'm changing your role, so you're no longer just like a guest star patient. You're like the first patient who then gets hired on the actual staff of quote-unquote right. doctors. So that was a really amazing call to get. I was very lucky to get in on that from the ground floor and kind of be able to craft the characters and craft the whole world with Daniel and Chris Rowe, one of the other first writers, and Kaylee Baldwin, and it was great.
Upon first seeing the promos, I think when I first found out about it, you guys were just about to start airing season 2, and I was like, what is this? Because it had been, I think I had only seen one other thing that was rotoscope animated, and that was A Scanner Darkly. And I love that kind of animation, and I was like, I don't know what this is. And then later when it came on Hulu, actually my younger brother recommended it to me, and I was hooked. I mean, at the end of the first 6 episodes, I was like, wait, where's the rest? And I'm really glad you guys are pumping out half hour episodes now, because I just, you know, I love the crew, love the style, everything. It'd be more a question for Daniel, but I don't know, maybe you can help me out here. Is what drew him to making the dream sequences, you know, the way they are?
Yeah, I don't know what... He really enjoys the rotoscope animation. I think what... Daniel made a short film called... I want to say it's called The Golden Sparrow, that you can look up.
Oh, right,
Yeah, it's all rotoscope animation. And I don't want to, like, talk down to your audience, but rotoscope animation is... Everything is fully shot, and then they draw over it frame by frame. There's a little bit of computer help, but it's pretty painstaking regardless. So I think he's just always been
stupid.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's probably half the audience is like, yeah, rotoscope, we get it, move on, asshole. And then the other half is like, what the hell are they talking about? So so I know he just likes that aesthetic. I don't know what turned him on to it in the first place. And actually, Scanner Darkly, another animation or a film that's completely animated in rotoscope. And this one other one that is escaping me. Oh, Waking Life is also another.
Right.
Yeah. And those, that animation, or a lot of those animators worked on the first couple seasons of Dream Corp. So it's this really niche animation process that's incredibly painstaking, very slow, beautiful. End result is awesome, but it just slows everything down. And I think Adult Swim isn't like used to that pace. You know, they're like, yeah, just shoot in front of a green screen and then like add an explosion and
rap. No, I know they're very, you know, based on the shows, they like to have these like weird abstract things that come on at 1 a.m. that are very short, you know, 10 minutes long, stuff like that. But I always like seeing when a show like yours or like the Eric Andre show grows in popularity into just something so much bigger. That's not to talk down to any of the other, you know, Adult
Swim
shows.
No, of course.
I love
Adult
Swims.
I mean, I love, I think there's a place for all that. Like, you know, Squidbillies and like these, I don't know, you call them lo-fi shows or like make very DIY, look like they were made in like somebody's like basement. Like they have this charm and this freedom that like we don't really get because everything has to be, you know, we can't improvise too much when considering like all these tech details that have to be sorted out and all these production details. But yeah, everything, there's a place for everything.
And you know, Dream Corp even starts out like that from episode one until you see the first dream sequence, which I think is what, like, when you're just like, what? while we're on the topic of animation and hand drawing stuff, we do something here on the So You're an Artist podcast called the Drawing Challenge. Normally it would be done live and in person, but where my co-host Brock Berenson, who is a sound designer and visual artist, he's, you know, not with us, you give him three items off the top of your head and he's going to amalgamate them into something. I'm going to text them to him and he'll send you the drawing, or I'll send you the drawing.
I love that.
But anything off the top of your head.
Okay. Like skeet shooting. Yeah. Okay. Like shooting clay pigeons. Let me say, I want to say like a lobster.
Okay.
Yeah. Just a lobster, just a sea bug. And let's say long curly hair.
I'm so fucking ready.
Me too. And then the rest of the podcast is just waiting for him to send that back.
Because he just landed, so he'll get it to you afterwards. And we use it, you know, promotional images and stuff like that.
Sweet.
But you'll get to see it. Everyone will get to see it. Usually some pretty cool stuff he comes up with. Right. So I guess I want to talk about like the growth of Dream Corp a little bit.
Sure.
Just like, I don't know, like what about it is like really attractive to you specifically? What, you know, kind of aside from, you know, being friends with Daniel and, you know,
I mean, like as an actor or as a writer, it's incredibly attractive because it's like essentially a live action cartoon. You know, there's, I mean, there's actual animated elements, but so much more of it is the crew of the actual live action, the five of us who work in the building and our interpersonal relationships and stuff. And in that, and you've seen it in season three a little bit, like it's just as wild as the goal was always, let's make the live action, the stuff that happens outside of the quote unquote dream world, let's make that as crazy as the dream world.
Right.
So, you know, there's like a roving robot played by Stephen Merchant that like is suicidal at times and like nihilistic, but also has this heart and is really just lonely. So there's Mark Proch playing Randy, who's like this like asexual, really sweet, but super creepy guy who hasn't left the building in 20 years and lives in the morgue. Like, and that Mark Proch is so brilliantly funny that.
Oh, yeah.
He's so wildly funny. We get like, by chance, we've happened to get like an amazing Robert's assistant every year. We started with Stephanie Aileen, and then she couldn't come back for season two. And luckily, I don't think anybody knows this, but luckily we had like put her in a coma at the end of season one, and then season two was going to be like getting Stephanie back. Yeah. And then contractually, she just couldn't come back because of a work conflict. So we had to recast her like a week before we shot.
Wow.
Yeah, and so we were rewriting scripts at the end. That's always exciting. And then, of course, John Grise, who has been in everything for the past 35 years or longer.
Yeah.
And is, like, the warmest. Like, he's a true artist. Like, you should have him on this show. Like, he just takes everything so seriously, but he's got this amazing sense of humor. And he's like he's such an incredible performer, and Ahmed is so I mean, the cast is amazing. So as a performer, it's great to, as a writer, you know, like anything you write, these amazing people are going to deliver it and make it better than what you thought it would be. And as a performer, especially with 88 ends up getting roped into going into the dream world a lot, either because he's getting his own therapy or because they're like, you're dumb enough to do it. Why don't you jump in with this person who needs extra help in their subconscious? And so for me, that as an actor, that means like just like working in this imaginary like world. Like, and I know that sounds like lame or actory, but like truly like on a soundstage with motion trackers everywhere and not green screen, just like fully like half dressed up as like a caterpillar and like inching my body along the ground as like Danny stands slightly off camera to feed me like lettuce. And just like screaming like, okay, smile, you love the lettuce. And then, so you're just like truly doing the, I don't know. I think the cliche of being like, I want to be an actor because every day is a different job. You know, one day I play a firefighter. The next day I'm a doctor. The next day I'm like a spy. And that may be, that happens if you're like Daniel Craig, but like it doesn't happen for somebody at my level. But in this show, it completely does, because every dream is so wild and weird. So I play a caterpillar, then I'm a butterfly, then I'm 10-year-old version of me, then I'm like naked dancing on a dining table.
Yeah.
So that's the, I mean, shooting it is so much fun.
I think one of the most wonderful contrasts between the dream world and the real world is in Dr. Roberts, how in the dream world he becomes this very level-headed, clever guide.
Yeah.
And then outside, he's always out of his mind. He's scatterbrained and everything. You literally have blood spurting out of your neck. Oh, I thought that was so funny. A wonderful cut where you
oh, yeah, I got stabbed in the neck.
So good. And I think the what is it? The running bit where you're quitting at the top of every episode is just added wonderful comedic value. I don't know. Yeah, I guess that's mostly what attracted me to the show, is kind of the bravery of it and how I just I've never seen a dream sequence done like that. And after a certain point, I just can't. It's hard to imagine a really good, successful dream sequence done any other way. I mean, have you seen Undone? The
No, I haven't.
Amazon. Okay, that's an Amazon show that's also entirely rotoscope animated, and I couldn't picture it a single other way. It's done. It's with Rosa Salazar, and it's about a young woman in Texas who is investigating the death of her father, and she eventually finds out that she can travel through different, I think she can time travel in a sense, and it's beautifully done, really well animated. I hope it comes back for second season. It has some. It has a lot of the similar trippiness and I guess charm that, you know, that Dream Corp has.
I gotta check that out. I love Rosa too. She's awesome.
Right. Okay, yeah. Cool. You know her. If we could real quick, I just kind of want to, you know, timeline your work, I suppose. Did you start as a stand-up comic or?
I grew up pretty close to LA and I was like a bit of a child actor. So my mom had a photographer friend. And when I was like 3, she was like, oh, can I shoot Nikki just for my reel or my portfolio or whatever? And she did. And she was like, oh, these are great. You should send them to an agent. And my mom did. And I got, I signed with this agent who was, she passed a few years back, but she was a like kind of a legendary child actor agent. Her name was Iris Burton. And so I signed with this like kind of fair, like as everything you picture about like an old school Hollywood agent. She chain smokes cigarettes all day long. Her voice is like, Nikki, you're gonna love this Mars bar commercial. They really want you. Like, I mean, she wasn't having conversations with me. She's having conversations with my mom. But, so I worked like fairly consistently, nothing big. I never was like a child star. I just kind of worked in a lot of commercials, a lot of like TV shows, a few like bit parts in movies here and there. I was still going to school, like just public school, like everybody. I wasn't like homeschooled or, you know, live in a weird, what are they called? There's like this apartment complex in Hollywood called.
Oh.
I don't know. Something weird.
Or it's like the one that the actors move to upon their first. Yeah. I can't remember what it's called. Something, I think it has to do with trees.
I know. It's right by Universal, but it's like.
Right.
It's like Fernwood or something, and everybody calls it Fern Weird because it is like, or used to be like, it'd be the mom would come out with like her little boy for pilot season, and they, because they're furnished apartments, so you don't need to move with all your furniture, and you would stay in basically this dorm room for like budding actors. Everybody new comes to LA would somehow live in this like bizarro complex. So I never got to enjoy that. But I worked consistently enough, and then I got really, really into theater, and I did a lot of community theater at, like in Thousand Oaks where I grew up. And then was being pulled out of school a lot, mostly to audition and stuff. And like, so going into high school, I was just like, I'm just going to focus on high school. Like, I'm not going to audition anymore, like, or at least not going to audition professionally. Like, let's just do high school, where I got really into show choir for some reason. That was like huge at my school. It was a lot of singing and dancing with like jazz hands and sparkly vests. Went to a junior college for a while where I started like studying writing, and transferred to USC where I continued starting writing. And that's when I started doing stand up. And that's where I met like Beck and Kyle and Dave McCary. And I graduated a year before them. Moved to New York to do stand-up, did stand-up for a year, and then when they graduated, it was always in the plan, once they graduated, we would start basically a Lonely Island-type sketch group.
Right,
so
yeah.
So came back. Yeah.
Tell me what it was called.
Good Neighbor.
Okay, right, yeah. No, there was another name for it as well. There was something else that had the word theater in it.
Oh, Theater of Life.
Yeah.
Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, was that with them?
So
yeah.
That was with Beck. Wait, it was kind of with them. So we just started making... I moved back to LA. We all lived in a house together. Very fun time. And we just were doing videos whenever we wanted to. And we were just like kind of all working odd jobs. Beck was waiting tables. I was like waiting tables and trying to do voiceover. Kyle was like, worked at like a film library as a like historian or something. Really, mm-hmm. It's a different time. And we kind of had enough success online that this larger umbrella of all these like big YouTubers, like, pulled us into the fold. This guy Kasim G, who a lot of people know, really, really sweet guy, and still to this day a good buddy, was a fan and was like, you should work with Maker. What we do is we just give you basically all the production facilities you need, and then we just split the profits of the channel 50-50. So we like produce everything, we give you cameras, we give you editors and all this stuff. And with that is when Beck and I created Theater of Life, which was like our basically weekly show. wasn't so dependent on writing a script or having like a killer sketch concept. It was just us riffing like on the boardwalk, you know, making fun of tourists and weirdos out in Venice.
Yeah.
And then that kind of took off, and then we just kept consistently crafting our voice and raising the production value of what we were making. And from there, we, you know, I got a few writing gigs. We all like were working acting here and there, and then like SNL came knocking, and that's its own whole beast.
Right.
And then we, you know, ultimately we're all there together, and then ultimately we're all there apart again. And then right after, as soon as that ended, Dream Corp started, and so there was no time to really like feel terrible about it. Although I did. I definitely took time to feel terrible about it. And then we just went into Dream Corp.
And this was fresh out of writing gigs mostly.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I worked, you know, I did like a pilot when I was like 25 or something that didn't get picked up. And I auditioned like, you know, you make it so far all like over and over again. And you never quite break through. I wasn't breaking through. I think that's what was so exciting about Good Neighbor, is like we were just kind of doing what you're doing, which opened doors, which is let's just do our own thing.
Mm.
Like, let's not wait. Let's not go ask if we can do this. Like, let's just do it and put it out there. But, you know, I'd always been auditioning. I'd always been acting. And I think, I mean, obviously because of Good Neighbor, and there was a body of work that you could point to, that even when I just got a straight up audition for Dream Corp, like, if I didn't have that body of work, if I didn't have, oh, Nick, you know, wrote these sketches with the other guys, and then those sketches brought Nick to SNL, like, Danny wouldn't have called me and said, hey, for those 10 minutes I met you in the audition room and then the 2 days we shot the pilot, I bet you could write all this stuff pretty good. Like, you know, definitely every little piece of the puzzle, whether you think it was important or not to begin with, like, led to that opportunity, essentially.
Yeah, I think, you know, that speaks to kind of the beauty of, you know, the accessibility of pretty much anything creative nowadays is that, like, you know, back in the 1970s, it would cost you so much money to, like, do your own thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, the film industry and the entertainment industry was just kind of really inaccessible, especially, you know, through the visual medium if you were trying to do film. And nowadays, I guess it's comes as a blessing and a curse, you know, from my perspective, where, you know, it's accessible and it's great and you can do your own thing. I mean, I have a small, like, little, it's borrowed, but a small little production kit right here that just to make short sketches and whatnot. But at the same time, it's just so saturated that it's kind of sometimes hard to get your foot in the door. So, you know.
Yeah, I know. I hear you. And that frustration is real. But, I mean, ultimately, it's hard to break through the noise. Definitely. And especially with, you know, I think we had pretty good timing when we came on the scene. Like, YouTube was fairly new. Like, YouTube was definitely not the definitive, like, video site. There was, like, Nine or something. It was, like, Crackle, Super Heavy, yeah. Or, like, Heavy.com. I mean, Funny or Die, of course. There was, I want to say there was at least six that we would have to upload to each one separately. And they all yeah. have different, you know, quality demands and all this. Which is crazy now. It's like all you would ever put anything up on is YouTube or Vimeo if you like have right. a nicer camera or want it to look more professional. But we didn't, I don't know. I think that noise thing is good. Well, I don't know. We maybe had less competition, but I think if you are just performing at the top of your game and you're getting better, then you're on the right path. Like right. even if, you know, you make one sketch and it's, looks like shit and it sounds like shit and it's funny, but it's still shit. Like, that's fine. The next one is going to look good, sound like shit, be funnier, boom, print it, wrap it, move on. Yeah. So I don't think, you know, I think the access is great because you don't have to have that. You can go and shoot any idea. You can go and like explore any concept without having to, you know, yeah. rent equipment or borrow equipment. I mean, you can do most of it on your phone. I know that's like a cliche thing to say, but like, I remember we got our first camera. We had to like beg Kyle's dad to like buy us this SD like tape fed camera. Like, it wasn't even like a hard drive. It was just like we had to buy tapes, and it wasn't HD and it wasn't digital even. Was it a mini DV? Wasn't even mini DV. It was it must have been mini DV.
Or there's also it wasn't VHS tape.
It wasn't high eight. I think it was mini DV, but it wasn't. Damn, I don't think it was DV. I don't think the first thing was DV.
That was my middle school film class. We shot everything on DV.
See, that's there you go.
And after one,
it must have been DV, but it wasn't HD. That's all I remember. And then like 2 years later, it was like SD cards, you know. So everybody mm-hmm. just had. You still had to rewind the tape and then like plug it in a cable into your computer and then.
Yeah.
So.
Did you guys do all your own editing too?
Yeah, Dave McCary, who is a great director and a good buddy, he was going to film school at the time. When we were starting to make these videos, we were all going to school together, and Dave was going to Brooks, I forget the name of the school, but it's a film school like up by Santa Barbara. So he would be up in Santa Barbara half the time, and then he would just come and like crash on our couch and like party with us the rest of the time when we'd make videos. But yeah, we've always done all the editing. I mean, Dave has always taken the lion's share. I geek out a little bit about that stuff too, so I like to sit with him and help him out when back in the day. Kyle and Beck, I don't think really cared or just were like, like, I mean, I'm sure they cared. They were just like too many cooks in the kitchen. You guys do your thing. But yeah, Dave's a great editor and he's really fast and has a great sense of timing. So
you geek out about the editing. I mean, the first thing I kind of learned how to do was edit. And at this point it's, you know, it's mainly what I do for a job is a lot of editing and stuff like that. I don't know that you geeked out about that sort of stuff too. I could sit here and talk about editing forever, but you know.
I mean, I could too. Well, I think that's important. You people are like listening, budding artists. Like, it's good to have control over everything. You know, you don't want to have a great idea, shoot it all, and then hand it off to somebody who has no idea. And even if you're not great at editing, it'd be great to sit behind that editor and have some cursory knowledge of it to say like, what if we did a cut here and this, and not just be like, I don't know, can it be funnier?
Yeah, that's another thing. I think one of the first thing you learn, of course, when you're, you know, nowadays it's a digital interface, you're on a computer and all. The first thing I learned was just all the technical where, you know, what does each little, window do? And then eventually, I guess the other thing you pick up is timing specifically. I think one of the hardest things to edit is comedic timing. is to just kind of, you know, nail it and stuff like that, which is another thing that, you know, Dream Corp does really wonderfully. I'm trying not to fanboy over this show because I'm going to come off like a total geek, but I really do love this show. It was like 1 a.m. and I just like made my friends watch it. And a couple of them were looking at me like, what the fuck did you just show me? Like, what is this drug trip? And others, you know, really got it. I think a buddy of mine who I was just writing to before we started, literally, I think summer of 2019, we shot like a little live action thing. And he said, I want to shoot a dream sequence. I showed him that to, like, you know, give him an idea of, I don't think it was nearly as abstract because, you know, we didn't have animation or, you know, access right. to giant CGI, anything. But anyway, yeah, we drew some inspiration from some episodes of the show.
Oh, sweet. Well, thanks.
I kind of want to like ask a little bit more about the universe outside of the dream sequences, like where,
yeah, of course.
Like, I mean, as a writer, where are you guys, as writers, where are you guys, like, blurring the lines of reality outside? Because I know you do it a couple times. Like, there's an episode, there's an entire episode that takes place out, you know, where you trip on the pickle,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, on, like, everything. Yeah, the pickle trip.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't even know if any of that's animation. I think that was kind of the bridge episode that we were like, we can just do kind of in-camera practical effects and make it just as trippy and weird as, like, these like esoteric dream sequences. Mm-hmm. We've had like a lot of discussions about like, what is the world even outside the walls of the Dream Corp facility? Cause you don't see much of it. You see, it's like obviously an abandoned strip mall and you see like the front yard, you see the parking lot a little bit in season 3. And we've also talked about like who was 88 and who is he to Roberts? Why did he come here and why is Roberts like has such an affinity towards him? And I don't know. We have a lot of fun theories of where that could go. I don't want to like spoil them all.
No, but, of course.
But I don't know. I think the idea is that you make the real world as trippy. You know, trippy is like sounds like it's just nonsense and it's like Alice in Wonderland. But you make it as like. I don't know, as inspired as somebody's subconscious mind can be. And then at least that tonally, these two worlds will sync up a little bit when you watch it as a viewer. And I mean, like, as like you're asking I'm going to go into the world outside the dreams. Like it's more enticing. It's like, what is happening here? Like there's like kind of this loose version of what the building is even like. Like we explored a little bit more into season 3, where like it's, all you can see from outside is like one floor, but like it goes down 50 floors. So like we introduce like an elevator and we have these like tubes and there's a lot of like all the entrances that we could get away with doing in the season 3 is people come up or down from like ladders. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you don't really get a gauge of how the set is laid out or really how the whole building is. We really got to play with sets on season 3 that like Roberts had been doing this dream science forever. Lost probably all of his funding 20 years ago, but still has access to this building. So there's like these weird, like, you know, there's a little bit of that in season 2, like the monochromatic hall where it's the room with all the different colors. And season 3, there's like, I forget what it's even called, but like there's like a room that twin patients come in and they're codependent, obviously. And we bring them to this very bizarre, like Terry Gilliam style, like,
wow,
weird test chamber. And then later we were able to flip that set and make it into like Ahmed's pharmacy or Ahmed's garden, which is like he has this like drug garden that he's growing all sorts of things and experimenting with like hallucinogenics and pharmaceuticals and everything. We also explore like Ahmed's actual pharmacy, which is like this huge full pharmacy set we got to play around with. I like exploring the physical world. Like it there's a lot of benefits, you know.
Yeah, you know, it's something that as a viewer, I have questions about. It doesn't bother me, of course, you know what I mean? Like keeping it contained into, you know, especially the first season where it's just mostly the dream chamber and like the break room and stuff like that. But you know, at the same time, yeah, you know, I get curious. Where do you guys shoot it?
We've shot it in three different studios now. First studio was like an old porn studio, like in the valley, like truly Chatsworth. I think they were even like, oh, if you want, we can open up this building next to you. And we actually have like existing doctor office sets like that we shoot porn in. Mm-hmm. And we're like, we're going to make our own. It's fine. So that was That was just this really small, low budget. The first season was non-union, at least crew wise.
Right.
So first season was low budget. You're just trying to squeeze out as much as you can from every single person and every single dollar to just make to prove this. And luckily, second season the crew flipped to union, which meant the quality of everybody working on the show like skyrocketed.
Right.
Which was amazing. I mean, that's why season one to season two is like night and day. Like season one looks like a student film. When I watch it, season one looks like student film to me. And season two is just like, oh my God, now they have a budget. And we did. So second season was shot like 5 minutes from my house at this studio kind of in Glendale. And I probably could have biked there, but I was afraid I'd fall and like break my leg and like then screw the production up permanently. So I would drive.
Be accurate and then, for patient 88, honestly.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it would make sense. Yeah, I mean, we would have worked with it. We had two guest stars, two guest stars of season three, like show up with casts. And we're like, huh, why didn't you tell us this? They're like, oh, well, I just had surgery. And it kind of works because there's two people limping around in the show and it's fine. Everybody's like on the verge of a breakdown in that show anyway.
All right. You know?
And then the third was some studio in Burbank, which that was the best by far. We finally like had it locked in. That was really cool because the main set, you know, like the break room, the office, the front room, the front, like the waiting room and the dream chamber were all built where they would be. So you could really walk around the whole thing. Like it was a cohesive unit, which is really
awesome, man.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that's me knocking on wood. I hope we get a fourth season, but. That's like really walking through that dream chamber is a dream. No pun intended.
Right. So just checking the time. Okay, we have a little bit of time left. I want to ask a little. I haven't seen it yet. I was trying to watch it last night, and I got so goddamn busy with schoolwork.
Yeah, how is school? What the hell is school like now?
Fuck. I've had two professors on this podcast. I'm going to Loyola Marymount University.
Oh, okay.
Dude, I've had two professors on this podcast. I hope they don't listen to this episode because they're about to hear me go off. But it's like I'm like sitting here. I don't know. It's so much sitting, staring at a computer, and it's so hard to stay focused. Dude, I'm a theater major too. Like it shouldn't be. You know what I mean?
And yeah, I know.
The same. I just can't.
Are you doing like scene work and stuff like over Zoom?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm supposed to be directing a scene for a directing class, and I was just like,
Oh my god! I'm sorry, man.
Yeah, it's tough, but you know, whatever. I wanted to ask about that. An online writer's room has to be pretty damn chaotic too.
You know, I thought it was going to be a disaster. I only have experience with it with Rick and Morty. I think we got pretty lucky with Rick and Morty because this whole crew, with a few exceptions, wrote a full season together, like as a one unit, and then the next season we all wrote together has been remote on Zoom. So we all kind of we all know each other enough. It's not like we're all meeting each other in a 9-person grid and saying, hi, I'm Nick. Oh, you go ahead first. No, I'll go. Sorry. What were you saying? Like we kind of, there's like the shorthand exists and like the pleasantries we're kind of done with, you know, we don't have to apologize too much to each other. Like we get it. And it's kind of miraculously working. It's miraculously working much better than I thought it would. I was like, fine, we'll sit in the Zoom room, but it's going to take us twice as long to get anything done. And we're kind of at a nice clip. I think a lot of that is momentum with having the same staff and that we all know each other and like, you know, we know how to gel really well. And others is maybe I don't know where the hours are less, like we're working less hours, but it seems like we're just more focused in those hours.
How are you guys getting ideas up on like a central space? Is someone sharing their screen? Is it like that simple? Or
that's the only bummer. Like there's like whiteboard software and they all kind of suck, but yeah, I really miss having a whiteboard. Like the showrunner Scott Martyr is doing a great job of somehow organizing all that. You used to sit in a room that had like toys everywhere and snacks down the hall and like all the characters were plastered everywhere. Fan art was everywhere. You're just like surrounded and immersed in this world. And that we all of course miss that, but I don't know. It feels like we're in wartime and you just keep your head down and like keep digging that trench, you know?
I can't believe I also teach film at a high school, and I can't tell you how much I miss just like being in the room, being able to like actually demonstrate like a lighting setup and be like, now you try it, like here, yeah. Here's the, just handing them the equipment and doing it. And also, I mean, especially since those projects are group projects, we do have a group writer's room, and I set up like when we're writing the actual script, you know, screen with like the actual, you know, script, and then we sure. do have a whiteboard for ideas and all that stuff. And yeah, it's just a shame not to be able to have that, but I'm really glad that especially you guys for show like Rick and Morty, you know, are able to or have been able to make it work, and that you're making it work.
I mean, you know, we'll share a Google Doc. Like that happens mm-hmm. a lot. Like, okay, we got to re-break this. We'll put up a Google Doc, and then there's like, you know, six little cursors cruising around. Some people making little jokes, side jokes. Anne mm-hmm. Lane, who's one of the writers, who's fantastic, always puts a Shrek somewhere. Like always hides like a tiny Shrek image somewhere. So we have our fun. We have our Shrek inside jokes.
I miss that wall. Do you have background comedy people? People who are always changing their backgrounds?
Background comedy. That's the only person, Jeremy Guilford, who's the writer's assistant this season. He's a great dude. He was like, every day I'm doing a different backdrop. But never like distracting, you know. He's right. just taking notes, and he chimes in when he knows he can, and he's great, and his ideas are great. He's the background guy. I recently introduced Snap Camera to the room, which is like Snap Camera. This is great. Everybody's like living online. Everybody, this is a practical tip. It's like a free download put out by Snapchat,
right?
And it's basically bunch of user-generated face filters.
Oh,
and
like okay.
Full yeah, screen filters. Yeah. And you can use it within Zoom. But it took us like 5 or 6 months before anybody used a filter. Like, other than like, oh, the back behind me is Jaws. I think my script in season 6, it has a little, I don't want to spoil it, but has some dinosaurs in it.
Right.
And so it definitely had, when we did the table read of that, I put the, I put a dinosaur face on me, and I had, the JP Jeep running away from the T-Rex as like a looped background, but it was kind of more distracting than anything.
Yeah. I can't stand the distracting, like Zoom backgrounds and stuff like that. I'm like, yeah. would you just stop? But so actually I want to ask a little bit, 'cause you know, Rick and Morty is no stranger to people that, you know, the show itself is very abstract and out there in its ideas. We haven't seen any, you know, sci-fi cartoon universe as imaginative as it, like, since Futurama. It's been so long. Did writing on Dream Corp help, you know, with that at all? Like, I know they're two fundamentally different shows, but at the same time, they do have something, you know, there's something just so unique in their pacing and also their animation style and just the universes that are built.
Yeah, I mean, there are like really odd comparisons to Rick and Morty and Dream Corp, you know. Now obviously none of them are on purpose, and I think it's just, oh, crazy scientist and sidekick, like that's enough to make people say, oh yeah, there's a lot of comparisons there. I think writing in that sci-fi realm with Dream Corp, and I'm a huge sci-fi like fan too, so I had that kind of, well, you know, I love that stuff. I like absorb all of that stuff so much. I think they lead into it. They lean into each other a lot. There was a few times, I want to say, I don't even know if it was season, I don't know what season or what, but like I would had to say to like Rick and Morty, like, oh, just to be like, they were going down a path of some idea. And I would say like, just to be, you know, full disclosure, there's an episode of my show Dream Corp coming out that like kind of does this. And then they'd be like, oh, okay, we can pivot away from it. But yeah, I think everything, yeah, I hope it's not that I only can write like bizarro science fiction shit, but, definitely helps kind of be in that same world. You don't have to change gears as abruptly, you know?
Yeah. And I think I want to close with, I did want to ask you about, this was the film I said I tried to watch last night. Couldn't get to it. I wanted to see your movie, The Unicorn.
Oh yeah.
But anyway, that's up on Hulu. I'll check it out tonight for sure.
Yeah, check it out. It's good. It's a good, light rom-com.
I'm pretty much going to be going into this film blind, but the title, The Unicorn, does that imply a third member? Is that?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect.
Well, did I ruin it already? No, it's pretty, you know, we established the premise pretty early on, I think. But yeah, a lot of people didn't know what that means.
Most it looks people like still a, don't. Like a weird West Coast sci-fi movie based off of like the artwork. So that's what that's what I was like, you know, that's the vibe.
It's more
I got,
like,
but...
I feel like it's more like, what is Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It's more like, a couple, this essentially this, I don't want to, well, I'm not going to spoil it for you, but a couple finds out something about one of their parents, kind of like this couple that's been failing to pull the trigger on marriage for years and years, finds out something about their parents, and that inspires them to try to find their own unicorn, like on one night, and all the missteps that come along with that.
And was this the first film that like you had, like where like it's your film, like where you, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I had met the director at a film festival, Robert Schwartzman, and he was like, you know, I would love to work with you. And we just started batting around ideas and kind of settled on this one. Actually, we were shooting season two of Dream Corp, or maybe even season, no, it wouldn't have been season one. I think we were writing season two of Dream Corp, about to shoot it. And he asked me to write the script, and I didn't really have time, so I wrote it with two buddies, Kirk Johnson and Will Elliott, who are like really awesome, like insanely funny dudes. They have this great sketch group called Beef and Sage. Now they're out here from Austin. And so the three of us kind of piecemealed the script, you know, like just you write this part, I'll write that part, I'll write this part, then we trade. And it turned out great. Like the process was a lot easier than I thought. Like sometimes I think people are like scared about working with partners, and it can be problematic, but for us, it was able to split the work up and made it actually doable.
Really?
Because I think the day we wrapped the final week, for a while I was shooting on the weekend for Unicorn, and then during the week for Dream Corp, and it was like pretty hectic schedule, but we like just pigeon-toed them right together and finished like Unicorn a week after Dream Corp, and then I just like took a long vacation. It was like 20-hour day. It was really like,
yeah,
the final day at Dream Corp studio, and they always save the big stunts for the final day, so it's like me being birthed out of the cocoon, me getting like shit sprayed into my face.
Yeah.
Just like all the work, I'm like in and out of the shower just to like reset makeup and like do, and now you have to be covered in honey as these bees swarm you. We went till I think 6 in the morning or something. Like no joke, like from 10 a.m. till 6 the following morning.
Christ almighty.
Because like we lose the set. Like the next day, it gets way, it's less expensive to pay everybody overtime than it is to like keep the sets up and rent that whole studio for another day. So we're just up against the wall. And I went home and slept for 10 minutes and then went on set for Unicorn. And we shot like all of the, actually Beck is in the movie. We shot all of our scenes, which thank God those scenes I'm supposed to be like drunk and it's really late at night.
Yeah.
Because I was just like red eyed, like bleary, like chugging Red Bull. It was a long day. Yeah.
Really healthy.
Nobody said that being an artist is healthy.
Right. Okay. I remember what I wanted to ask was the last thing. I know we could go on about this forever, but... So there's been a little bit of, the last thing I heard, and you know, it was in my high school science class, we're like, we don't know anything. We know a little bit about dreams, just sort of some of the activity that goes on in the brain, but we don't know what anything means, why the images are compiled the way they are. Do you guys do what kind of research do you guys do to put together some of the dream science within the show?
It's funny, 'cause there's like Chris Rowe, who's been like a writer since day one on that show, and Daniel, are way more into like that being, which is important. Like they're way more into like, they do a lot of Eastern like philosophy research. We do a lot of like dream symbology research. Like in our writer's room back in the day, it would be like dream books, symbol books, like, speaking of Sanskrit, like what is the Book of the Dead? Not the Book of the Dead. It might be the Book of the Dead.
It's not the Kama Sutra, is it?
No, probably one of those in there too. But they, like, Danny was really into that kind of side of spirituality. And it's beautiful because you get, like, these amazing, like, and Roberts is really into Eastern medicine and Eastern spiritual. Dr. Roberts on the show is really into that type of thing, too. So you get, you go into these books and you see this amazing visual imagery that we can then, like, borrow from or, like, pay homage to, really. Like, there's one of the characters, is like basically needs to distance herself from her mom, or is afraid about having a baby is what it comes down to. And like at the end, she like confronts her mother, who is like this eight armed, like Buddhist god, basically, who like blossoms out of a lotus flower. And like, you know, art, the artists who make that artwork is like have this rich, beautiful world to pull from. So, I mean, to answer your question, they are way more into it than I am, in the sense that I'm just like, if it's funny, it's funny, let's move on. And then they are like, no, no, let's make it also be relevant. And I have less interest in that, so it's great. I can just focus on making it silly, weird, and funny, and have the story make sense. And then they can add this, like, which I think is probably what keeps the people, what keeps audiences coming back, is that there is this,
yeah,
you know, it's not, we're not just making it up. It's not like, oh no, your Amboogadabalia is poisoned by your desire center. Like, I mean, most of the science is made up, but the philosophy behind it is like well researched and thought out.
Yeah, there's a beautiful marriage between, you know, the more Eastern philosophies and the, you know, made up fun science stuff.
Yeah, the, yeah, then the goofy wacky stuff.
Yeah, I think that's what's great. If I may comment one last thing, I think it's wonderful that each patient is now permanently stuck with a camera in their brain. after each thing. Don't know who came up with that, but that's great.
Man.
And
yeah.
Even after watching the show, it's a heavy debate whether I would actually go to Dream Corp for anything. Maybe not. I don't know.
I know. I mean, patients get really like permanently fucked up in there. So, but would also you? Some.
Would Nick Rutherford go for a dream appointment?
I might. Yeah. I might. I think you, well, I mean, cause don't you want to, if you know that's there and that you could experience that, wouldn't you have to? It's like if an alien landed and was like, hey, Satya, do you want to come just across the universe? I don't know when you're going to get back, if at all. If you do, it could be 50,000 years from now, but you're going to see the cosmos. You like, wouldn't you have to say yes? Like,
yeah, I think so.
Unless you have children or something and you're abandoning like somebody who absolutely needed you, like.
Yeah, like, no, I can see that. Yeah, there's something where you just kind of like, I think I have to. It's also one of the, you know, few opportunities, at least for someone like me, where you could to dream lucid. And, you know, and
oh, I did a lot
control.
Of. Yeah, I mean, that's, I think, the dream. That's would be the best part of it, is just like having this like playground of your mind that you can manipulate. And I did like a lot of lucid dreaming or lucid dream research in college. Like I was really kind of obsessed with it for a while.
Because it's a wonderful escape.
Yeah. There's some easy steps that anybody can do that will like increase your chances of having a lucid dream and increase you like making them as long as possible. Right. It's a fascinating field.
Well, anyway, this was great. Thank you so much for sitting down, like learning more about the show, man. More about your work. And when you guys got something new, when the new season of Rick and Morty drops, or if, you know, fingers crossed, Dream Corp gets renewed.
I know. We'll,
you're welcome,
we'll see.
Back it's anytime.
All... Yeah, appreciate it. And you should have, I don't know. Have you talked to Danny? You should have somebody else on your show. Somebody who
I would love to. I was going to ask you this after the mic. I would love to have John Grice on, but.
Sure.
Daniel's not too interested in doing podcasts or interviews right now. In fact, that's why I said you should talk to Nick or Ahmed and. I'll probably reach out to Ahmed as well.
Ahmed's great. I mean, Sunita Manny is like the assistant this season. It also sounds like we had Megan Ferguson was season two's assistant, and then same thing. We were like, man, we love Megan. She's fucking so funny, and she plays this like Igor like assistant. She's so great. And then season three, she couldn't do it because she had a Netflix show. So our show is like where all of. Like where talented female comedians come to like do one season of and then get a better job and have to leave us. So, but we got Sunita Manny instead, and she's fantastic.
I know she's really good.
Yeah, she's so good.
And so each of them have lucky. Their own. They each have their own like amazing thing they bring to the show.
Yeah, yeah, it's cool. But I think some people are like, "Oh, it's funny how you always like kill the girl," and we're like, "We're truly trying not to. We're like trying so hard to keep the girl and." They just keep getting better opportunities because they're so much better than all of us. and they move on.
So again, thanks. Wonderful show. And, you know, you've got one dedicated viewer here, and I recommend
thanks,
it to
Satya.
Everyone I know.
Appreciate it. Keep forcing your friends to watch it late at night. You know, You only lose a few of them.
You know what? Tomorrow, I'm headed to a friend's house. We have a backyard projector set up. It's our little quarantine escape, weekly escape. We have a couple drinks. I'm going to have him watch a couple episodes of Dream Corps.
Yeah. I'll send you, I'm going to send you a few links for season 3 so you can just pop it on like a thumb drive. And
thank you so much. It's really, sweet of you, man. Okay, cool. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Have a good rest of your evening, man.
You too.
Folks, thank you so much for listening to this very special episode. I hope you enjoyed yourself just as much as I did. All right, never miss an episode of So You're an Artist by subscribing to us on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hey, if you want to follow us for updates, behind the scenes, and drawing challenges, go ahead and check out our Instagram page that is @artist.pod or Twitter @artist_pod. If you feel so generous and so kind, you can go ahead and leave us a review on our iTunes page. Hey, you know, the stars are very much appreciated and the bad reviews will just quietly get swept under the rug. Once again, catch the entire third season of Dream Corp LLC on the Adult Swim website. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of So You're an Artist. I will see you again very soon, maybe in a week or so, I hope. We're excited. And all right, peace out, guys. Have a good weekend.